The Charlotte Podcast is a member of the Queen City Podcast Network. Listen to your city at queencitypodcastnetwork.com.
Let's do a podcast.
Welcome, everybody, to the latest episode of the Charlotte Podcast. This is John.
And this is Miller in this episode 252. Man, John.
Yeah.
We sound good.
Where are we?
Well, you're going to say it a lot in the upcoming interview you did. We are in the Brooklyn Collective.
We are. We are in the podcast studio, the third floor of the Brooklyn Collective, the Mecklenburg Investment Company building, which is the oldest commercial building in Uptown Charlotte.
Shout out Thad Tate.
That's right. Thad Tate, JT Williams.
I've always rolled with Thad.
Thad, it's fun to say.
It is.
But yeah, we're together physically, which is why it sounds good.
Emotionally too.
Emotionally, always emotionally together, physically, finally the same space. But yeah, we're recording here. We've got a great guest today.
Oh,
wait, you haven't asked me yet.
Oh yeah, John. Hey. Who is this week's guest?
So this week we have Gwen Jackson of Urbane Environments on to talk about preserving the stories and legacy of Brooklyn, the name, and kind of what amounts to like a branding project.
Yeah, she used the word brand, which I thought was fascinating.
Yeah, yeah. It's a cool way to think about history and in Charlotte specifically. So great conversation with her. And then we talk a little cheers and jeers later.
Yeah, which breaking news as we recorded this podcast.
we might have to scrap them.
We're not going to talk about that. business, you can listen to us on any podcasting platform. Leave us a rating or review. If not, it helps. We need your validation. You can follow us on social media at CLT Podcast. Hey, John, let's just get right into it. When we get back, we'll have Gwen.
All right, we are here with Gwen Jackson, founder and president of Urbane Environments. Welcome to the Brooklyn Collective Podcast Studio. Gwen.
I am absolutely thrilled.
So this is very exciting. This has been in the works for a while. We've been looking forward to having you on. Lots of exciting stuff to talk about. Kind of, it's got a connection to us recording in this space too, which is great. But we'll start as we always do. We'd love to hear about some of your background. So how are you here right now in Charlotte? What's your relationship to Charlotte? How did you come to be here and get involved in all of the
That's about to be cool a really deep metaphysical like,
it was.
Question.
I'm not smart
I'm
enough.
Glad you pivoted out of that,
John. I wasn't smart enough to bring that one home from a metaphysical standpoint. But what's your story with Charlotte, Glenn?
Man, as the saying goes, how much time do you have? My Charlotte story actually begins when I was living in Gastonia, North Carolina, and Charlotte was our place to come to the city to do things.
Wait, what years was this?
I'm hesitant to tell you.
You can tell me.
1974, 75.
Okay, I'm glad Gastonia. Look, I grew up in Gastonia, and it was that you come to Charlotte to do things. But you never like stay or anything like that.
Miller's fond of saying all roads lead to Gastonia. It's like
I didn't know.
Oh, yeah.
So you're in good company.
Mm-hmm. Well, then you relate.
Yes.
And it used to be kind of a small town that you didn't really feel like it was going to be the place you wanted to land as you, you know, moved on from high school and places like that.
Agreed.
So I moved away for several years from the whole region. I moved to New York, and I lived there for about 7 years, and I decided I want to come back down south. Let me look into Charlotte now. I contacted the Chamber of Commerce, got one of those relocation packets, and said, hey, I better get back while the getting is good and before everybody else rushes from the north back down south.
That's again. Very prescient of you, by the way.
And you definitely weren't going to go back to Gastonia.
No foul. I love the gas house. I got another Gastonia story.
It's like little brother. We're allowed to make fun of Gastonia.
Ashbrook 75.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Green Wave.
You mean Trashbrook.
This is not what it was, this is supposed to be about.
John, you know what a green wave is? It's just dirty water. That's all it is.
I've never met a Husky. Are you a Husky?
No, I'm a Jaguar, a Forest View High School Jaguar.
Oh, see, you guys came along after I left Ashbrook. We never played you guys.
We can all agree that South Point's the worst, though.
Anyway. So, Old Gastonia, we are all for you. And so anyway, I decided not to move back to Gastonia, moved to Charlotte, and noticed how Charlotte was just really changing to an area that I wouldn't mind living in. And I actually got involved culturally in my first employment here in Gastonia at the original Afro-American Cultural Center.
Where is that?
Well, oh. Funny you should ask. It was the birthplace of the Harvey B. Gantt Center.
Oh,
and
okay.
It was located in the Little Rock AME Zion Church's, okay. What they call their community development center facility now. Okay. It's the first Little Rock AME Zion Church that sits behind the new Little Rock AME Zion.
We're on
at
7th.
Stonewall and 7th.
Okay, got it.
And at that Afro-American Cultural Center is where I met people who had resided in Brooklyn, in Charlotte's Brooklyn, and they were preserving their history in the Afro-American Cultural Center. So that's how I even actually, not just my Charlotte story, but my Charlotte story actually coincides with me learning about Charlotte's Brooklyn.
Yeah. So at the time, that wasn't kind of your initial foray into it, was just kind of African-American history in Charlotte, not necessarily the Brooklyn neighborhood, just because that's a piece of it, but you kind of got the history on the west side and kind of more than that. So it's kind of a broader scope than just Brooklyn. Is that correct?
The Afro-American Cultural Center was not just about Charlotte's African-American history. It was also a place that invited culture from all over the country. Mm. Through art,
okay.
Music, and performing arts. And the location of the Brooklyn Archives, so to speak, at the Afro-American Cultural Center was significant in that that was a relationship that was formed as a result of the Afro-American Cultural Center developing here in Charlotte.
Okay.
So the original Afro-American Cultural Center had a very local participation of historical relevance, but it also broadened the types of arts and culture that was presented to Charlotte's cultural scene.
Got it. Okay. So you start there, and you were working in an official capacity?
I was working as the community outreach person there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
We started with creating opportunities for artists to interact with young people.
Oh, that's cool.
And you said at that point you started interacting with people who were residents of the Brooklyn neighborhood. Is that what kind of led to you specifically becoming passionate about that portion of Charlotte's history?
Absolutely. And I related because I came from a community that also lost one of its cultural institutions, which was our public schools in our neighborhoods. And I heard the story of Second Ward High School, mm-hmm. and how its closing also impacted the residents, the former residents of Brooklyn at the time, not just losing their community through urban renewal and urban displacement, but also losing their cultural institution, which was their high school.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Which was everything to the community. And so I came from a community in Salisbury, North Carolina, like that, where we lost our junior high. I'm sorry. We lost our elementary school and our high school in the same year when we were, when they closed those schools to enforce integration.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. And Second Ward High School, for our listeners that might not be familiar with it, Charlotte's first African-American high school, is that right?
I cannot say that for sure. I'm not ever the historian expert for Second Ward in Brooklyn.
Okay. I know.
Try not to answer questions. Okay. About
I think it gets
first.
Sticky. Okay, fair enough. I think it gets sticky because I think Meyer Street School was the first one, and that was just the schoolhouse. I think that might have just been kind of all levels of education. So I think if you want to get technical, Meyer Street School. But okay. Anyway, so anyway, very old, kind of important institution in the Brooklyn neighborhood, in what's now Second Ward, High School. Okay, so you met the folks from there, and then kind of how did you keep digging deeper? You're kind of doing kind of artist stuff and kind of connecting that with community outreach and young people and all that. How does that transition to kind of more Brooklyn and Second Ward?
Well, it actually didn't go into it. It wasn't a straight line that way.
Okay.
So I learned the Brooklyn story through the gatekeepers of the Second Ward High School history and the Brooklyn history.
Okay.
And I'll just have to name the person that really introduced me to the Brooklyn story was Vermeil Ely. And so I met Mrs. Ely and other people who worked around the Brooklyn Preservation at the Afro-American Cultural Center. And then eventually I went and did something different. I actually went to work in a community development center or corporation at Johnson C. Smith University.
Oh, okay.
So I'm going from one African-American historic institution to another one, but this one is more involved in community development, urban redevelopment in terms of housing and economic development along the Westray Betty's Ford Road business corridor. So there I went, I went from an arts and cultural institution to an economic and urban redevelopment institution, but the two had a lot of correlation.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, eventually I came back involved with the Second Ward High School and Historic Preservation members and volunteers because they had settled into a location on Beatty's Ford Road, which they were calling their Second Ward Museum.
Okay.
So I reconnected with them because part of the work I did as community relations for the Northwest Corridor CDC, which was based at Johnson C. Smith, was outreach. And they needed to freshen up their historical brochures and educational information. And they reached out to me to help them find resources to pay for rebranding, so to speak, of their preservation efforts.
So that sounds like exactly what kind of brings you here today. Exactly. Very similar, right?
Yes.
So can you tell us a little bit about kind of how does all that experience tie into kind of what you're working on now?
Well, John, I think it's a passion project that really grew out of my nostalgic personality, mm-hmm. but also my what I feel is very important about African-American places, that some of them will remain known through its history, through writings and things like that, but fewer of them are known as a place where people come and learn and visit and have a distinct area branding. And when they go to a town, they're looking for authentic places to go. Brooklyn in Charlotte, you know, just has all of those traits.
Right.
So I forgot where we were. What we were talking about.
Because we're talking about the neighborhood, and kind of here's how I interpret what you were just saying. People come to Charlotte, not from Charlotte. They're like, hey, where's a historic district? And because they expect that from other big cities, Philadelphia, New York, Chicago, literally anywhere, Tampa. And you kind of don't have that in Charlotte because we've torn down so many of the buildings that were historic and in some case, like really impressive old architecture. But the Brooklyn neighborhood still has some of that. We're actually sitting in a 100-year-old brick building right now. That's one of them. So I think the case you were making is that the Brooklyn neighborhood has a lot of those traits that might just need a little TLC and dusting up and branding to highlight, right?
Exactly. Exactly right. And there is an opportunity, I think, to assist Charlotte's tourism and cultural destination spaces and places by including an area called Brooklyn as part of what is uniquely authentic about Charlotte.
Yeah.
So, you know, that goes all the way to visual representation through, well, there's plenty of markers around Brooklyn. It's not like if you come to Brooklyn, you can't figure out you're in Brooklyn. There are lots of markers and places that designate the historical significance of that place. There's been several ways for people to identify historical places in Brooklyn through the Levine Museum's Know Charlotte app. And there's just lots of places that say, hey, you're in Brooklyn, but there's just not that overall arching brand that says you're coming into Brooklyn.
So what's the challenge? Is it street signs? Is it pamphlets? Like what is it? Is it murals? What is it?
Well, all of that can happen, but I think it's acknowledgement by the larger area that is now Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. Like NASCAR is in Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. Whole Foods is in Brooklyn. The Starbucks along Stonewall, that area is in Brooklyn. Hotels are in Brooklyn. The Convention and Visitors Bureau is in Brooklyn. The Harvey B. Gantt Center is in Brooklyn. So that awareness among these surrounding institutions that they're in Brooklyn would help.
Yeah.
I think it's fascinating that you're using the word brand. I think that that is in creating a brand for Brooklyn as a place these places exist and they should identify as part of that. That's kind of the first time I heard this kind of way to think of an area as a brand. How did that evolve into a thought process and something you're looking to do?
It would probably still go back to my my relevance to that removal of the fact that you can know the history of an area and not know what it's called, in a sense. I feel that we have done a lot of preserving of the history in a lot of the areas that Brooklyn represents that are also represented in places that you're more familiar with, maybe like Tulsa, where you hear a lot of people talk about Black Wall Street. Or in Wilmington, if you hear about the violence that happened in Wilmington. And you hear about those places, and it's always talked about in the past sense, like that's what it was then. But if you meet people here in Charlotte who grew up in Brooklyn, who are still living, and who lived in Brooklyn growing up, then they will tell you that to them, that area is still Brooklyn.
Yeah.
It stopped being called Brooklyn when the houses were removed. It stopped being called Brooklyn when the school was closed in a lot of people's minds who didn't ever have a home here. Mm-hmm. But for me, not being an original Brooklynite, I relate because where I grew up is still what it was to me then. And so when people start calling where I grew up a different name, it's like not only was the place removed, but now the whole everything about it is not what it was anymore.
Yeah.
Such a great explanation. Where do you go from here? So obviously, what are the steps? What's the path forward in terms of the work you're doing?
I call this a project destination marketing plan, has to have a foundation to build on. So I can talk about it, I can advocate for it, but nothing really cements an idea like another well-known institution that has name recognition and is known for its expertise. In this case, the Charlotte Urban Land Institute has a technical assistance program that when it involves itself with a project, it can give it substantial boost in terms of what that idea is about.
Got it. That's fascinating.
So one example that comes to mind recently, and we talked about it a little bit before we turned the mics on, but Atrium Health has a big campus that they announced recently, and it seems to me from afar that they've attempted to embrace kind of the physical land. So it's going to be, I don't know, Miller, you and I haven't talked about it, I don't think, but like on Moorhead, between Moorhead and Uptown, and like what's now Stonewall Street is kind of where that district is going. The Atrium Health like campus, their like innovation campus, it's a really big deal. It's going to be a ton of investment and kind of cement Charlotte as like a future of kind of medical and healthcare innovation, right? So, but anyway, so the point is they're making that investment, and it seems like based on the name that they have at least acknowledged kind of some of what has been there before. So I don't know how much, like, were you guys involved with that? Like, how, or just pleased to see it? Or, like, how does that work?
That's exactly what I'm speaking about in terms of an institution that has a major impact by what they do. Atrium Health decided correctly that they would honor the past and the history of that particular area of Brooklyn where Pearl Street Park is, and help maintain and sustain the historical significance of that area. And they apply a new brand to a part of Brooklyn that will be called the Pearl Street Innovation District. And I think it helps a great deal. It is not exactly doing it the way that, you know, we've been talking about branding Brooklyn, but it does help substantially cement the area's history.
Right.
And they are intentional in not only their branding of the name, but in some of the ways that they'll be providing community benefits.
Yeah.
But I think that the overall area of Brooklyn will being known as Brooklyn will actually be enhanced by their designating that area as the Pearl District.
Yeah, and so that's really, so there was Pearl Street Park that was kind of right like near what we call Midtown now, right? And like the Target that's down there was Pearl Street Park. That was like an actual park, or at least a place that the children of the Brooklyn neighborhood would play, right? That's kind of...
Yeah, it's called the first African-American public park.
Oh, really?
In Mecklenburg County.
Oh,
that's
I didn't know
its designation historically. And it is a very beautiful redeveloped park.
Yeah.
It's absolutely gorgeous. And there's Brooklyn sculptures, and there are... Like I was saying earlier, there's so many places in Brooklyn that say Brooklyn.
Yeah.
What else should it be called but Brooklyn?
Yeah.
And that's why I was kind of tying everything up. That's why I'm fascinated by the use of the word brand, because the work on a brand never ends, right? So there's always work to be done to continue to build and do this. And you've already, we were talking off mic, and we're not going to get into it on the mic because I know you won't answer, but there's other things that'll be coming out in the next weeks, months, as you continue to do your work, as things are renamed, as you begin to change things in Charlotte to both recognize the past, but also continue to build on this existing place for what it is. And that's just exciting work you're doing. How can people follow along and keep up with all the things you're doing?
Well, we are planning to create this opportunity for the Urban Land Institute to do the technical assistance program, but we have to raise money to pay for the project. And long term, this project will have significant benefit to small businesses that may want to relocate into Brooklyn.
Oh.
It'll provide some of that market insight into what types of businesses might be successful in an area that is a cultural tourism, historic preserved visitors district. All of this is our vision for how people will see Brooklyn through this Urban Land Institute project, which is not only about the branding of Brooklyn, importantly, it's also potentially a reference and a guide for new development of a major mixed use, one use, or a commercial development in the transit area development that's going to occur in Brooklyn. If we have an opportunity to inform developers about the preservation and the branding that we are involved in, we hope to influence how they actually approach some parts of their development that can actually illuminate that they're in Brooklyn as well.
Yeah.
You know, and so Atrium Health is probably going to set a with the developer they're working with, is going to set a probably a good example of how that can be done. The Brooklyn Village Project will set a good example of how that can be done. And we want to have this Urban Land Institute to help assist and influence development that's not yet on the books, but that will be eventually coming to the area. Because we think about Brooklyn in the past a lot, but this project is really about the future of how people will remember Brooklyn, see Brooklyn, refer to Brooklyn. And we hope that this will be thought of not as Brooklyn past, but Brooklyn past meets Brooklyn now.
Yeah, very cool. So if people want to kind of see the plan such as it is or get involved, do they just keep their eyes peeled for the fingerprints of what you've done over the next couple of years? Or is there a place to go to learn more?
Right. There is the Brooklyn Collective is the centerpiece of where this project is emanating from. And they're the partner with my company to actually do this project. So the Brooklyn Collective will have information available on their website, and I'll have information available on a website that we're developing currently now. And we will try and get you to put that information out there as soon as
it's accurate.
Please share it.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today. It was I think we talked about the history so much, but thinking also about now is a frame that we probably don't explore too often, and really, really, really smart stuff and exciting and important things. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you. You guys have made this very important for our listeners, and I appreciate that.
And if I may,
please, John,
add more. I always do this to Miller. Yes, I always add more when Miller has a really nice closing like that. I always add more.
I thought I landed it.
You did. You actually did. I feel kind of bad.
Great. Keep it going.
Miller nailed it. But we're in. I want to emphasize again. I know we'll talk about it at the top when Miller and I bring it in. But we're in the Brooklyn Collective podcast studio, which is in the Mecklenburg Investment Company building on the third floor. That 100 years ago was where African-American leaders of the social clubs and kind of things like the Shriners would meet and talk about stuff. And we're in the same place as that. And now we're here having this conversation about how to preserve the legacy in an updated medium of a podcast studio, talking with you about all this stuff. I think that's pretty cool.
May I add more?
Yes. Miller, can we keep going?
Just a little bit more, because you know, when you get to talking, you leave out so much, because it's so much to try and explain and get it across. But I'm very happy you brought up where we're located, because this is actually the activation of all of the ideas that we're talking about. There is actually an active Brooklyn now here at the Brooklyn Collective building. So thank you for reminding us all of that.
Well, thank you. I'll let Miller bring it home, but thank you for joining us. Go ahead.
We'll end it there.
Sorry, Bill. All right, we are back. John and Miller.
Great interview.
Yeah.
Lovely lady.
She was so nice. And Is there a better person to be in charge based on her background to be in charge of what she's doing?
I think more people from Gastonia. Well, I mean, more qualified people from Gastonia. There's a select group of people from Gastonia who should have more power.
Have you seen those TikToks where it's like waiting until Ludacris tells me what to do? And like the song is Stand Up and then it's like immediate, you know? It's like we have a thing where it's like waiting until someone mentions Gastonia.
In the podcast.
And this it happened early.
Speaking of you, I thought about you semi-near Gastonia. So
yeah,
2 weeks ago, I thought about you as I was running through the woods just thinking, no one cares.
Oh, did my mantra help? I forgot about that. Yeah.
It was really fulfilling grace. I was really good. And I was just running as I was passing people and I was just like, no one cares.
No, this guy does not care.
This is so stupid.
Well, good. I'm so glad. Yeah. I'm so glad I could help lift you up in your moment of need.
Thank you. Well, I didn't need you. I just used you.
Fair.
All right. Cheers and cheers, Joe.
Yeah. All right. Shout out to, this is our cheers, to Charlotte Shout, like the art festival.
May I tell a story?
Please.
We did not talk about this. I did not have, I thought it was going to be a good event, but I didn't know what it'd feel like. So we went up last Sunday and there was a Hornets game. There's a Charlotte FC game. And it was the first time we took our 2.5-year-old actually uptown.
Yeah.
And it was the perfect way to introduce him to Charlotte.
Yeah.
Like he sees the, like Charlotte and calls it the towers, but he's never been uptown.
Okay.
And he rode the seesaws. He like stared at fountains. He like, it was like, and there's people, but it was fun. Everyone was happy. They just beat Atlanta. It was just like it was quite possibly the perfect way to introduce like a 2.5-year-old to the city.
Shame he won't remember it.
Yeah.
He's only 2.5. Oh, but well. You took some pictures.
I think.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
Somebody did. I saw a picture.
I did see a lady fall off the seesaw. Which
oh, really? Yeah. caveat emptor.
Also, you bailed on it, but also was part of Charlotte.
Yeah. I wasn't able to make it.
It was lovely.
Yeah. How'd that go?
Oh, it was good.
Yeah. Your vocal talents were put on display.
And physical. Oh, it's on
camera. Oh, what?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry.
Good.
But it was good. It was really, did you go to oil?
I dabbled a little bit. I wound up having to be out of town for a lot of last week, but so I didn't get to immerse myself as much as I did, but I got enough of a taste. Like, it's so awesome. I love it. It's just like, so like, I've said this a couple times, I think maybe even to you, where like, it doesn't feel like Charlotte because it's like such a cool thing. It's kind of insulting to Charlotte, but I think that's what Charlotte needs. There needs to be a transition period where you're like, whoa, this is so cool. It's like, it shows what is possible.
Yeah. And I think there should be some form, obviously not to that scale, size, all that, but there should be something uptown to do every weekend.
I agree. Yeah, exactly.
If only there was a way to get uptown. Talk to me about your jeer.
So my jeer is transportation in Charlotte. I'm kind of worried about this.
Grind your gears?
And not because like I'm stuck in traffic or anything. Like I'm worried like at a macro level, and I'll tell you why.
Take me to macro.
Just so I've been
30,000 feet with me.
I've been for anybody that is not me, Miller just made a very subtle transportation joke that was a pun. So I'm just calling that out because like he's laughing at himself and he knows that I understand it and I'm acknowledging it.
You really get off the tracks.
Oh my God. Now, as I was saying, so I've, for a variety of reasons, been traveling around like up and down the Eastern Seaboard for the last 2 weeks. Oh my God. And like other cities haven't figured out because they've been around for longer and have dealt with millions and millions of people like traversing the land of their cities for longer. Right. And I see these macro trends of like people moving out of the Northeast and like Charlotte is booming, obviously, and more people moving here. And there's all kinds of issues with that, with kind of home prices and everything. But whatever, you can like add supply and density and all of that. You can figure it out. Like the suburbs will extend and whatever. You can figure that. But like all these people are going to want to do cultural activities and go to Charlotte Shout and like the sports stuff that is localized and centralized in Charlotte. And nothing has changed with the infrastructure.
Well, it's kind of like the Charlotte, we always with Charlotte identity. Like Charlotte identity is completely being focused on right now.
Yeah.
And not thinking about 20 years from now.
Right. And it's like, I'm really worried about it after being in these other places that have like problems. Like it's difficult to like take Ubers in Manhattan and everything. And like driving around DC is a problem. And like the metro isn't great and all that. And like they have their own problems, but like at least they got something to fix.
Yeah.
And like right now, Charlotte is just like a bunch of cars, some buses people don't use, and a light rail that impacts like 15% of the city. And that like is a major problem. So I guess this is me like sounding the alarm that this is going to get like, not that you need me, anybody needs me to do that, but like just an observation I've had that like you're adding all these people to a place with an already strained transportation infrastructure. And I'm just worried. I'm worried. So that's my jeer.
Good. You really flew through that. Well, John, it's been great seeing you. People haven't been by. We've talked about it enough, but Brooklyn Collective has been
yes.
a tremendous host. We'll be back recording this quite often.
Yep.
But it is good to be in your emotional and physical presence today.
Likewise. Well, shall we woo?
Let's woo.
All right.
One, two, three.
Woo!
QueenCityPodcastNetwork.com.